questions about Israel's compliance to the international law and the accountability of its officials at Ibrahim, Gaza City.
Another Israeli soldier has been killed in Gaza amid the Palestinian resistance against the invading IOF troops. The Israeli military has confirmed the death of the soldier from Golani Brigade in the southern city of Khan Yunis. He was killed on Thursday in an explosion that took place when mines intended to detonate for resistance operation detonated against him. The mines were reportedly intended to demolish buildings used by Palestinian resistance. Earlier, the military wing of Hamas released a video showing an attempt to capture another Israeli soldier who was later killed while trying to escape during the clashes in Gaza. According to the IOF, the death toll among Israeli forces in the Palestinian territory since October 2023 stands at around 900, with nearly 450 of them killed since the start of the regime ground invasion. However, many believe Israel undercounts its fatalities among its troops. Hamas has slammed the recent remarks by Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, which he ruled out the possibility of a comprehensive truce deal for Gaza. The movement said Netanyahu's remarks reflect his malicious and ill-intentioned efforts to block all deals that could lead to the release of Israeli captives and end to the Israeli regime's aggression against Gaza. Hamas added that it had a comprehensive proposal to release all captives at once in exchange for an end to the aggression, full withdrawal of Israeli forces, and the unrestricted flow of aid. Netanyahu, however, turned down that agreement. Hamas also condemned what it described as Netanyahu's attempt to derail the ceasefire process. The movement, however, affirmed its continued commitment to engage positively and responsibly in negotiations aimed at ending the war. Israeli forces have fatally shot two young Palestinians in the occupied West Bank after they carried out a retaliatory attack that left at least one Israeli soldier dead. The Palestinian Health Ministry identified the men as Mahmoud Abed from Alul and Malik Salim from Brizia, northwest of Nablus. The two men were killed south of Bethlehem, and their bodies have since been seized by Israeli forces. The regime's military said the men carried out a combined shooting and stabbing attack near the Gosh Etzion settlement, killing one security officer and injuring at least four others, some in critical condition. The spokesman for Hamas military wing, the Al-Qassam Brigade, hailed the heroic operation against Israeli forces in the West Bank. Abu Ubaidah described the operation as a response to the aggression that has turned the lives of Palestinians into an unbearable hell. He called on Palestinian youth to escalate resistance throughout the West to stop Israel's plan for annexing the entire territory. And staying in the West Bank, a Palestinian child, Amar Amiyeh, was fatally shot by Israeli forces on June 23rd in Kufr Malik village near the West Bank city of Ramallah. Amiyeh, 13-year-old, was a Thai boxing champion dreaming of representing Palestine on the world stage. But, like many other Palestinian children, his dream was silenced by Israeli bullets. Our correspondent, Naka Ahmed, has spoken to his mother and friends and sent us this report.
In a small village near Ramallah, 13-year-old Amar Hamayel was more than a child. He was a rising star in Muay Thai, also known as Thai boxing. With a heart full of passion and fists trained for glory, Amar dreamed of raising Palestine's flag on the international podiums. But Israeli bullets shattered that dream, ending his life and leaving behind silence where cheers once echoed.
Amar left the house around noon to buy juice. He promised he would be back quickly for lunch. But minutes later, Israeli force opened fire. A bullet hit him in the back. The Israeli intelligence called us and said, "Your son is with us, lightly injured, but he was dying."
As villagers rushed to rescue Amar, the Israeli soldiers held them back. It took over an hour for an ambulance to reach him. By then, the damage was done. Amar died on the way to the hospital.
Everyone in the town tried to reach him, but we were blocked. The ambulance was delayed. The roads were closed. He died in the ambulance. My child, my little man, I still can't believe he's gone.
Amar was the youngest member of his Muay Thai team, having started at the age of 9. He traveled, trained, and won medals. His eyes always fixed on the future.
Maybe it's forbidden for our children to dream. There is always occupation standing in their way. Ammar, my child, was one of them. They murdered his childhood, just like they do with so many others.
Ammar's teammates share their feelings too about his martyrdom.
Ammar was like a brother to me. When he was martyred, it broke my heart. Life with him was full of laughter. He was like a flower, always dreaming of raising Palestine's name high.
Ammar's gloves now rest quietly in a drawer. His medals hang without pride. His dreams were not too big, but the walls, guns, and soldiers that surrounded him were.
Ammar Hamayel was not just a boy. He was a future, a fighter, and a dream. And though his last match was stolen, his story will not be forgotten. Naqa Hamid, Kufr Malik, Occupied West Bank.
And now to Yemen, where hundreds of thousands of Yemenis have once again rallied in the northern city of Sa'ada to reaffirm their solidarity with Palestinians amid the genocide in Gaza. The demonstrators carried Yemeni and Palestinian flags, chanting slogans in condemnation of Israeli crimes in Gaza. They denounced the Tel Aviv regime's aggression against Yemen as well. The demonstrators also supported the Yemeni armed forces for their anti-Israel operation. Yemen have been holding pro-Palestine rallies almost every Friday since the beginning of the genocidal war on Gaza in 2023. And to Europe now, where Bosnia is marking the 13th anniversary of the Srebrenica genocide committed by Bosnian Serb forces, which is the deadliest mass killing in Europe since the Second World War. People are gathering at Srebrenica Memorial Center in the eastern Bosnian town to commemorate the genocide. In July 1995, more than 8,000 Muslims were executed and buried in mass graves after Bosnian Serb fighters overran Srebrenica during the final months of the inter-ethnic war in the Balkan country. Around 1,000 people also remain missing. The Srebrenica genocide is compared to the current genocide unfolding against Palestinians in the Gaza Strip. Iranian Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi said on Thursday that if the world had truly learned from Srebrenica, we will not be seeing another genocide against Muslims in Gaza. U.S. President Donald Trump presses ahead with his tariff war, announcing 35% levies on all imports from Canada. In a letter to the Canadian Prime Minister, Mark Carney, Trump said the tariffs will be put into force August the 1st. He pointed out that the new rate is in part caused by the flow of fentanyl from Canada, adding that it may go up if Ottawa retaliates. The 35% tariff is up from the current 25% that Trump imposed last year. In reaction to Trump's announcement, the Canadian Premier said his government will continue to defend Canadian workers and businesses in their negotiations with the U.S. Meanwhile, hundreds of people took to the streets in Sao Paulo on Thursday to protest against new tariffs on Brazilian goods announced by Trump.
This tax that Trump is imposing on Brazil is absolutely unacceptable. It goes against our constitution. He's interfering with our sovereignty. We cannot allow this.
It's just another one of his ridiculous stunts. He was going to take over the Panama Canal, he was going to take over Greenland, and he said he'd end all wars in 24 hours. And now he wants to slap a 50% tax on Brazil.
The Brazilian president has vowed to hit back against the U.S. import with a similar 50% tariff announced by Trump. Earlier this week, Trump sent more than 20 letters to the leaders of other countries, including U.S. trade partners such as Japan and South Korea, outlining new tariffs on goods coming from those nations. I do have a guest joining us, Sakina Datto. Thank you so much for joining us, journalist, author, and producer, joining us from London to discuss that tariff with her. Sakina, we've seen this repeated move by Trump, not just now, even before, during his previous presidency, where he spoke about, you know, taxing the world and getting what U.S. deserve. But we're beginning to see this tariff affect even U.S. trade partners and even military alliance that the U.S. has formed around the world. How do you think this trade war is going to pan out as it concerns U.S. domination of economical aspects of the world and also its military dominance that it has around the world as well?
I think, you know, it signals to me a bit of a desperation from Donald Trump, both on economic front, but also political front. So on economic front, I think, you know, as somebody who comes from the background of the business world, he sees the economy of America getting weaker, you know, by day. And he's coming up with these measures to try and boost the economy. But a lot of economists actually predict that it's going to do the opposite. It's going to cause inflation, you know. It's going to affect the local farmers' production within the U.S. and also the partners like Canada, Mexico, his neighbors. And of course, then there is also the political aspect of it. We recently saw him talking about imposing this tariff on anyone who is willing, who wants to be part of BRICS countries. Mm. Now, this is a political move because, of course, you know, the U.S. has enjoyed hegemony in the global, arena for a very long time. And the challenge that is coming from BRIC countries is a huge one for America and its partners. So he is trying to ensure that he uses force and uses threats to dispel or any attempt by BRIC countries to share this hegemony.
Do you think it will succeed? Sorry for interrupting. Do you think that plan would succeed? Because we do see that people, businesses that don't trust. If you can no longer trust your business partners, how are you supposed to keep on having business agreements with them?
Not only has trust been eroded, which obviously will not make this worse, but also, you know, Donald Trump by himself, the kind of person he is, we have seen how many times he puts up these tariffs and then goes back on his words and removes them and then starts them again. So really the trust factor is very, very low at this stage. But also, mind you, you know, the world has changed. There was a time when U.S. could dish out threats to the world, and people used to be scared on every front, whether you're talking economic or you're talking politically. The world is now starting to realize that, you know, we can't give in to this bully, and we will stand up to them. And so you have seen a lot of BRIC countries saying that, you know, whatever the U.S. says, we are going to stay on course, and therefore we are not going to be scared of these, supposed tariffs coming in. And I actually don't think they will work. It is just a threat, because if they were to be implemented, they are going to affect more the U.S. economy than anywhere else. I think this is just a showman, you know, like everything else Donald Trump does. This is just words. And I think very soon he will realize that this is not workable. It is going to cause, you know, global inflation, but more so it's going to affect the Americans more than anyone. Already their economy is hugely affected. There is huge deficit. And I think he will only succeed in making that worse.
Well, those who support Trump will argue against that, but we will be keeping our eye on that story. That is Sekina Dato, journalist and producer, joining us from London. Thank you so much. And that does bring us to the end of this World News Bulletin. Thank you so much for joining us. Goodbye for now.
This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuhal ladhina amanu, O you who believe.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Now it's time to listen to a short speech by Sheikh Amin Rastani.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. We were trying to take inspiration from Ashura and Karbala, Imam Hussein. Not to make the same mistake of the people of Kufa that pushed them to the point where they stood in the face of the Imam and the Imam explained why they're making this mistake. And what does the Imam say there? He says, مُلِئَتْ بُطُونُهُمْ بِالْحَرَامِ, that their bellies have been filled with haram. And this is what we want to speak about tonight, inshallah. I want to share with you some of the hadiths we have in regards to this. So it's no surprise that on the day of Ashura, the Imam says, you know why? You don't even want to listen to me. I am the purest of Allah's creation on the face of the earth right now, but you don't want to listen to me. It's because your hearts are dead. Why are your hearts dead? مُلِئَتْ بُطُونُهُمْ مِنَ الْحَرَامِ. Some of these hadiths go like this. The Holy Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi wa sallam said, he said in this hadith, the salat of a person who consumes haram, right? Once again, haram doesn't mean pork necessarily. We took care of that. A person who consumes luqma haram, all right, that doesn't belong to them because they acquired it through the wrong means. So 40 days, this person's salat doesn't have an effect. Brothers and sisters, the only thing that elevates us in this life is salat, like that's recurring, the way it repeats itself. And that is very scary for us, it's as if they haven't prayed for 40 days. Now, this is not permission to just skip your salat for 40 days. You still pray it, but it doesn't have the effect it's supposed to have. And until 40 days, it says this person's dua is not accepted. And any amount of their body that has grown through this food that they put in their body is deserving of Jahannam and fire and burning. Another hadith. I'm just going to go through a lot of hadith here just so we understand how important this is. That in a hadith it says, Allah says that, O my servant, you do dua, I will answer. Know that all of your duas are answered in some way when you do them towards me. Except for the dua of a person who consumes haram. Consumes that which doesn't belong to them. Consumes that which they have acquired through batil means. The sixth imam. Allah does not accept the dua of a person who has a hard heart. Okay, so here you can put these together now. One hadith says, when you have haram livelihood, your dua is not accepted. Another hadith says, Allah doesn't accept the dua of those who have hard hearts. Put these together, what do we get? A person who takes in haram, and has a haram livelihood, they're going to have hard hearts. Now, alhamdulillah, thank God, we don't live in 61 AH. And we're not in Kufa. Yeah, but if we were, God knows which side we'd be on if we're struggling with something like this. Another hadith. It says that barakah goes from your wealth when you bring in haram. Now some might say, but look, all the haram out there, it brings abundance. Abundance is different than barakah, they say. Barakah, if you want an English equivalent for it, you know, it's blessed. What does it mean? Well, we have a hadith, it's a famous one, I think some of you have heard this one, that the Holy Prophet, they asked him, what does it mean that your wealth is blessed? It's abundant, right? He says, no, there's a difference. And so he's like, look, I can't even teach the math to you, but I'll give you an example of what it means. It's a magical touch that Allah gives that you can't get through any other way and means. How is it? The Prophet says that, look, let's talk about the sheep, okay? The sheep, how many times does it deliver? How many times does it have babies throughout the year? It says once. And every time a sheep has baby, how many babies, or how many, whatever the word for baby sheep is, how many baby sheep does it deliver? One. Now, maybe two if they're like twins or something, but like one, okay? Usually it's just one, these mammals, right? But let's look at the dog now, the canine. How many times does a canine have puppies? Two times, it says here. And every time, there's a litter of six or seven puppies that the mother gives birth to. All right. Now, do we eat more dogs or do we eat more sheep? Well, duh. I mean, unless you're in some parts of the world, which is very weird what they do. But all in all, we consume sheep and goat and these things throughout the year, correct? Okay. No one eats dog, really. All right. Now, if that's the case, on one hand, dogs are giving birth to more and more and more puppies every time, and they're delivering twice a year versus the sheep that's once a year, only gives birth to one baby. But guess what? All these people of the world that are eating these animals and consuming them, does it ever run out? Not really. It should be at least the case that you see more dogs out there than sheep, but it's just sheep everywhere. Yeah? All the memes and stuff on the Bakra Eid and so on, they're all out there. So the Prophet here, he's making a point. He says, this is how barakah works. No, give me a formula, O Prophet. Give me a formula that allows me to understand barakah. He says, I can't give you a formula. That's why it's called barakah. Or else we would call it math. Okay? So here, the hadith tells us that the barakah goes from your wealth, but it's abundant. You don't understand. Who knows? There's a possibility all of a sudden you have an accident, all that money has to go for something else. We don't know. Now, I'm not saying that it's going to always be the case. Sometimes a person will have a haram income and it's going to be abundant and it's not going to run out either. The least is that in the akhirah we'll see who's richer and who's not. But sometimes this is what's happening. The barakah goes. It has an effect on the descendants of an individual. Wow. Now, it doesn't mean that they're going to go to Jahannam necessarily, because that's them and their free will. But all in all, if a person has a haram livelihood, you can bet that there's a good chance it's going to affect their kids. And so this is where the responsibility is so heavy on the shoulders of the breadwinner of the household. I was going to say of the man of the household, but I can't even say that anymore. The breadwinner, whoever it is, of the household. The burden is heavy because this person now has to figure 100 things out just so the livelihood is halal, so the children aren't affected. And that is the case. These are some of those things, those causes and effects we have to accept. Causes and effects that we have in this life. Whether we like it or not. How is possible a mother smokes? What happens when she's pregnant? The baby might come out with a defect. This is cause and effect. Also cause and effect, haram livelihood, children, something wrong with them. Not physically, spiritually. We don't know how things work in this life, but they've told us. Be careful about this, be careful. Last night, what did we talk about? Sometimes the way I deal with my parents shortens my life. These are real, brothers and sisters. You tell it to a secular person, they laugh. You tell it to a secular person, this barakah thing, they laugh. But all in all, we know, we believe in the ghaib. And we know there is a ghaibi aspect to things as well.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
Rahi Kareemun Azim Alimun Halim Hakimun Mateen Ghafur Shakurun Wadud Qayyumun Ra'uf Saburun Majid. صلي على محمد وآل محمد يا مؤمنين صلوا عليه.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavet, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pourreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Aminolemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
Almost 58,000 people have been killed by the Israeli regime in Gaza since the start of the genocide. Now, 187 civil society organizations and trade unions from across Europe have published a joint letter demanding that the EU suspends all official ties with Tel Aviv, a position backed by many EU legislators.
Iran replied to an Israeli illegal attack by bombing Israel. Okay, it's easy to condemn Iran, as you have done time and time again. But over the last years, Israel has bombed, what is it, Syria, Lebanon, Iraq, Iran, Sudan, Yemen. Of course, Palestine is illegally occupying Palestine, parts of Syria, illegally occupying parts of Lebanon. Are you able to condemn this?
Islamic Republic of Iran.
The International Atomic Energy Agency is being accused of acting as a tool of the US and Israel in an effort to discredit Iran's peaceful nuclear energy program. Simultaneously, many EU lawmakers say the West is complicit in Israel's campaign to starve Palestinians. People on the streets of Brussels seem to agree.
A lot of people are dying, a lot of kids. It's not a good situation.
I think the Israelis are scum of the earth.
It's a tragic crisis, no matter how you look at it or how you describe it.
I hope one day it will be better for them.
It's suggested that EU political leaders are enabling Israeli aggression because they fear upsetting the United States.
In fact, instead of holding Israel to account, President von der Leyen has Netanyahu, a war criminal, on speed dial, and she's actively encouraging to carry out illegal strikes on Iran.
Fresh calls have been made in the European Parliament for EU countries to close their airspace to Benjamin Netanyahu and enforce the arrest warrant issued against him by the International Criminal Court. Critics argue that the EU's credibility is in tatters due to its glaringly inconsistent foreign policy, imposing 18 rounds of tough sanctions against Russia, yet failing to take any meaningful action against the Israeli regime, despite an ever-growing catalogue of atrocities. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
A potential diplomatic thaw may be on the horizon between Iran and the United States. This, according to Iran's top foreign policy think tank, the Institute for Political and International Studies, IPIS. Experts examined the high stakes and uncertainties of renewed Iran-U.S. diplomacy.
There are many ambiguities, but also there are many things that, you know, we can talk about, including Iran's consistent policy of trying to keep peace. We are an anchor of stability in this region. We are a civilization. We have been here for millennia.
Participants reiterated that Iran remains committed to diplomacy, but trust has eroded.
As you saw, they were attacking all our nuclear sites, which were under IAEA constant monitoring and under the safeguard, which is the grave violation of international law. We tried also to be very measured and proportionate in our response to this aggression. Our act of defense was under Article 51 of UN Charter, but at the same time very much strategically calculated to avoid the spread of this war to the Persian Gulf and to our region.
The events also shed light on the recent geopolitical miscalculations by Israel and the United States and their failure to achieve their strategic goals.
Iran is still trying to be measured, and also trying to be very calculated. But God forbidden, if the day come and they pose any existential threat, as they sometimes we are hearing from the other side of the Atlantic, then Iran will be a different Iran. What Iran did by showing the capacity and capability of targeting, even by informing them that we are going to attack different sites, and we did it. It was a manifestation of the will and the capacity of Tehran, and this very strong message that enough is enough. Our region is very much exhausted and tired of these violations and war, and we hope that the others have got this message clearly.
According to the speakers, Iran's measured military response has shifted the narrative, forcing a reassessment in Washington. As this webinar underscores, Iran's resilience stands firm. While Israeli and U.S. objectives remain unmet, it is Tehran now that is charting its own path forward and changing the narrative. Gizum Shahmadi, Tehran.
For the first time since launching its military operation in Jenin camp in late January, Israel has allowed 25 Palestinian women to briefly return to the camp. The entry was granted in coordination with the Palestinian liaison. However, three of the women were still denied access despite prior approval.
A soldier stopped us from going in, even though we had coordination. I only wanted to enter the camp, see its streets, its alleys, and my home. I wasn't going in to collect belongings. It's been 6 months since we were displaced. We haven't seen our homes. We used to stand on the edge of the mountain just to catch a glimpse. They forced us out, and we were left with nothing.
Among those who was allowed to enter the camp was Sahar Abu Zaini, who was displaced several times since 2020.
We have lived through many rounds of displacement, but this one is the most painful, both in terms of the days we are enduring and the number of martyrs and the wounded. Also, we carry the weight of what's happening in Gaza, which surpasses even our own suffering. We ask God for strength and compensation for the pain we face.
This isn't just about demolishing buildings. The Israeli regime is trying to reshape life in the camp entirely. The demolished houses represent entire lives and memories that the regime has erased.
The situation in the camp isn't like it used to be at all. All the houses are damaged, destroyed, and affected. My feeling is a mix of joy and sadness. I saw my house for the first time in 6 months. It was heavy when I returned to my house and saw it, even though it was badly affected, but we hope to return to the camp and rebuild it again.
Across the West Bank and Gaza, Palestinians continue to face forced displacement and the destruction of their homes. But despite all that, they remain determined to stay on their land.
The occupying Israeli regime is changing the entire life structure of the residents of the Jenin camp by altering not only the physical space, but leaving the inhabitants, who are deeply attached to the camp, with no alternative options to make their lives sustainable. Tiba Asi, Occupy Jenin.
Detonating cords, ammonium nitrate, tritium are among the materials Italy's far-right government has been illegally supplying to the Israeli regime since the start of the Gaza war in early October 2023. This is the outcome of an investigative report by the Altra Economia magazine. The report was presented on Tuesday during a public conference held at a branch premise of the Italian Senate in Rome. Despite the Italian government's denials, the magazine has exposed how the executive led by Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni has been increasingly providing Tel Aviv with dual-use materials that can be easily used to build explosive or even develop thermonuclear bombs.
Italy never ever exported detonating cords nor ammonium nitrate to Israel before 2023. One could say these materials are intended for civilian purposes. However, the high quantities of exported ammonium nitrate leads us to think that it is destined for military use. As for tritium, Italy does not even produce it. Rome buys it from Germany. Rome's sale of tritium to Israel has guaranteed revenues from just a few thousand euros in October 2023 to 1.5 million euros in 2024.
During the conference, it was pointed out that these dual-use materials have been shipped to Israel through Italian companies not authorized to trade weapons. Italian magistrates have opened an investigation into a shipment of more than 13 tons of metal components destined for Israel and held at the port of Ravenna on the Adriatic coast. Since the start of the Gaza war, Italian firms have also been selling Israel light weapons, ammunition, and spare parts for M-346 trainer aircraft acting in violation of Italy's constitution and laws.
Quello che viene fuori dall'inchiesta.
The outcome of the magazine's report is extremely grave. Magistrates must investigate these circumstances. If our government is violating Italian norms on arms smuggling, Italy would be an accomplice in Israel's Gaza genocide.
By supporting Israel, Italy has chosen to be on the wrong side of history. Rome is completely subjugated. Disregarding international norms will lead the world to a future of wars and insecurity.
Italy is the third largest seller of arms to Israel after the United States and Germany. Over the past months, mass pro-Palestine marches have been held in Rome to denounce what the protesters see as the Italian complicity with the Israeli regime in the Gaza genocide. More and more Italians have finally realized the nefarious role played by Israel and the United States in West Asia. Max Civili, Rome.
A chilling new trend is emerging in the Israeli military's genocidal campaign in Gaza. The systematic targeting of civilian cafes, lounges, and local gathering spots. Over the past few weeks, airstrikes have increasingly hit these densely populated civilian areas during peak hours, with cafes and social hubs becoming a recurring target. The Gaza Ministry of Health confirmed that dozens have been killed in at least six separate attacks on cafes and social venues in the past 10 days alone. The most prominent was when the Israeli warplanes dropped a powerful 5-ton MK-82 bomb on the Al-Baqa cafe, teeming with families, students, journalists and artists, which resulted in at least 30 fatalities.
It was a war crime. This place was full of people fleeing the scorching heat of the tent and the lack of electricity, and came to do their work, to study and to connect with their friends. The surrounding was also full of displaced families and tents. This was a war crime that can never be justified.
This pattern of attacks appears to be a deliberate tactic to maximize civilian casualties and the psychological devastation among the people who cling to any thread of a normal life.
Beyond the physical destruction, the deliberate targeting of cafes and lounges strikes at the heart of Gaza's social and cultural life. In a region where power outages, displacement and trauma are the realities of every day, Ad Ibrahim, Gaza City.
As the U.S.-Israeli attempted genocide in Gaza reaches 21 months, Israeli Premier Benjamin Netanyahu visited Washington amid a major protest against his arrival at the White House. It was widely reported that a ceasefire was going to be announced.
This is such a crime on such magnitude that we'll be talking for generations about this starvation and shooting. It's hard to comprehend, to be honest. It's like a nightmare that never ends. So this is the opportunity, Mr. Trump. This is your chance. Make the difference.
In what many called a twisted contradiction, no ceasefire was announced, but Netanyahu did say he had formally nominated Trump for the Nobel Peace Prize. The continued refusal of a ceasefire left many saying that Tel Aviv seeks nothing less than the complete eradication of Gaza and its people, and that only Washington could turn off the war machine.
I would like to see the U.S. first and foremost stop all arms to Israel, and they need to flood Gaza with aid. People are starving to death. People have no water. Babies have no formula. It's absolutely immoral and disgusting, and we need to get them aid as soon as possible. And it's completely possible. It's all in the hands of President Trump.
Poll after poll continues to show that support for Israel has plunged to once unthinkable levels, especially among Democrats and Americans under 50 years old.
I don't think so. Changed enough. So I don't understand how we could be still supporting Israel. Last week we sent them a little over $500 million for new weapons. I don't understand how we could be supporting Israel at all. So I wouldn't consider whatever amount of change has been to be enough. So it doesn't impress me.
As a result of their disastrous 12-day war on Iran, the two leaders are now forced to pivot from promises of regional domination and Iranian collapse to some sort of a new strategy. What appears certain to many are their likely goals: continued U.S. imperialism, an end to organized opposition toward Zionism, thwarting the democratic self-determination of the average Arab, and all at whatever the cost to Palestinian, Arab, and Iranian lives. Ramin Mazahiri, Washington, D.C.
Daily Twitter and Fars displacement. This is the reality for Palestinians in the northern Jordan Valley. Following the 1967 occupation, the Israeli regime built settlements there due to its proximity with the Jordanian border, fertile land, and abundance of water availability. The first settlement, Makoza, was built in 1968, followed by the Alon Plan that led to the creation of seven new settlements. These settlements are located along the Jordanian border and on the eastern mountain slopes overlooking the Jordan Valley.
The suffering inflicted by settlers is akin to death. They forcibly displaced us, employing a brutal strategy of compelling us to obey their orders. If we refuse, they resort to stealing and killing livestock under the full protection of the army and using weapons. Furthermore, they seized land and continuously threatened the Palestinian population, creating an environment of fear and terror. In addition, they inflict physical and psychological harm by demolishing homes and depriving Palestinians of their most basic human rights.
Settler violence in the northern Jordan Valley is a daily occurrence, often with the support of Israeli soldiers. This includes the forced displacement of Palestinian farmers and herders, confiscation of their property, and physical assaults. The aim is to displace the local population and seize their land for settlements. Palestinians are denied access to their land, while settlers act with impunity, controlling resources and land as if they are the rightful owners.
The tragedy of the Jordan Valley lies in the statements of Israeli ministers and the policy of occupying regime, which is no longer hidden. We know what is happening in the Jordan Valley, and it is Israel's colonial and expansionist plan in order to expel Palestinians and replace them with settlers, demolish Palestinian homes, and tighten the noose on them, depriving them of the basics of life.
Israeli forces are systematically oppressing Palestinians, including shepherds and farmers, by confiscating essential resources like tractors and water tanks, as well as seizing their livestock. These items are being auctioned or subject to exorbitant fines, making it difficult for Palestinians to reclaim their property.
Israeli settler gangs, under the protection of the occupying forces, keep attacking Palestinians in the northern Jordan Valley on a daily basis. The regime also continues the seizure of new areas in the West Bank through its policy of forced displacement. Tiba Asi, occupied West Bank.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 11,740 kilohertz for Southern Africa. An FM, 91.5 megahertz for Iran. You can also listen to the English channel of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is iranradio.ir. You can also listen to the radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our radio quality and other means.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله.
This is part of the speech delivered by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a commemoration ceremony marking the 36th anniversary of Imam Khomeini's demise. The ceremony was held in Imam Khomeini's mausoleum on June 4th, 2025.
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم.
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel.
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Based on a definite divine decree, the Zionist regime is collapsing. June 4th, 2025. Now, in the nuclear industry, there is one point that is a key element, and that is uranium enrichment. Our enemies have focused all their attention on this very process of uranium enrichment. They have concentrated their efforts on this. The nuclear industry of such immensity is useless without having the capability for enrichment, because we would then be dependent on others in order to obtain fuel for our power plants. It's like having crude oil in your country, but not having the right to build a refinery or produce gasoline. You have crude oil, but you must buy a gasoline from someone else. And that country will sell it to you, if it wants to, at any price it chooses. And if it doesn't want to sell it to you, it won't. It will come up with an excuse and refuse to sell it. It will say, do this or that, otherwise I won't give you any gasoline. This is their goal. If we have 100 nuclear power plants but no uranium enrichment capability, it will be of no use to us, because a nuclear power plant needs fuel. If we can't produce that fuel domestically, we will be dependent on the US, and they may impose tens of conditions for giving us nuclear fuel. We have already tried this. Regarding 20% enriched fuel in the 2000s, the US president personally asked two presidents of countries who are friends with us to act as intermediaries. He told them to ask Iran to give a portion of its 3.5 enriched uranium, and the US would then provide the 20% enriched uranium that Iran needed. We needed 20% enriched uranium. Our officials accepted their proposal, and it was agreed that the exchange would take place. I said the deal must proceed in this way, that they bring the 20% enriched uranium to Bandar Abbas, and we would then test it to ensure its authenticity. Only then we would give the 3.5 enriched uranium to them. When they saw we were careful and insistent about receiving 20% enriched uranium, they broke their promise and didn't deliver it. Of course, during that time, when our officials were engaged in those political talks, our own scientists inside the country were able to produce the 20% enriched uranium themselves.
That you've done.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Warm greetings from Tehran to all of our dear listeners across the globe. You're tuned in to Iran Radio, your trusted source for news, culture, faith, and thoughtful dialogue. It's Saturday, July 19th, 2025, and we are truly pleased to be with you as we set off on another day filled with enriching content and meaningful experiences. There is so much ahead, so stay with us as we explore it together. Let's begin with a quick look at what's in store. First up, it's time for today's special, a daily segment that highlights a range of Islamic and Iranian occasions. This program brings together a rich mix of elements like Quranic verses, heartfelt prayers, nasheeds, insightful reports, and more. Right after that, don't miss Hadith of the Day, where Sheikh Muhammad Jafar Danish presents a hadith from the Holy Prophet and his noble family and Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them. Each hadith is carefully selected to reflect the significance of a specific date in either the lunar or solar calendar, and is accompanied by a concise explanation. Then we move into a curated set of radio productions segments we've created especially for you. And for those eager to deepen their connection with the Holy Quran, stay right where you are. Let's recite the Quran with Mr. Habibullah Fasihizadeh is coming up next. This session focuses on level 2 recitation, helping you improve both fluency and understanding of the Holy Quran. And don't go far. Today's special comes shortly after.
IRIB English Radio in the month of Muharram presents today's special. Every day for 15 minutes.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Salam, dear brother. Salam, dear sister. Thank you very much for joining us. This is today's special from IRIB English Radio. In this episode, we're going to speak about the role of women in Karbala.
Ya Ummal Masaib, ya Zainab, ya Zainab.
Zainab, eloquent, vibrant Zainab. Zainab, Zainab, brave, defiant Zainab. Zainab, Zainab, silent, tyrant Zainab.
On Friday, and in the studio of Iran Radio, today is 15th of Muharram, 1447 of the Islamic Lunar Hijri calendar, corresponding to the 20th of Tir 1404 of the Islamic solar Hijri calendar and the 11th of July 2025 of the Christian Gregorian calendar. At this time, we open Allah's book, the Holy Quran, and we listen to verses 6 to 14 of chapter Al-Fajr.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Alam tara kayfa fa'ala rabbuka bi'ad.
Have you not considered how your Lord dealt with Ad?
Iram dhatil 'imad.
With Iram, who had lofty pillars.
التي لم يخلق مثلها في البلاد.
The likes of whom had never been created in the land.
وثمود الذين جابوا الصخر بالواد.
And with Thamud, who carved out the rocks in the valley.
وفرعون ذي الأوتاد.
And with Pharaoh, owner of the stakes.